Welcome to Lost River Legends. Our motto, Ex Tenebris, is Latin for out of the shadows. We attempt to understand the complex world around us and bring light to subjects hidden in darkness. We explore paranormal topics with guests from all around the world. Now welcome your Lost River Legends hosts, James and Brett. We hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome everybody to Lost River Legends. My name is Brett, and I'm one of the hosts of the show. And this is part two of our interview with Matt from Matt Squatch Presents. And in part two, we wrap up our conversation with some of the topics that we touched on in part one, kind of come full circle. We had a really good time talking with Matt, and we appreciate him coming on the show. And just as a teaser for next week's episode, we're going to be having Laura Krantz from Wild Thing on. Both James and I went to the same high school that Laura went to. We're excited that she's able to come on the show and spend some time with us. We have some great questions for her, and you guys do not want to miss out. And without any further delay, we pick up where we left off last week. Enjoy.
I married into a big family, and just about all of everybody, kind of including my wife, you know, my wife's very supportive of the Bigfoot paranormal cryptid thing that I'm into, but the rest of my family is just like, they all thought it was a big waste of time until recently I started making some money. Now they're kind of encouraging me a little more. But they all just think like exactly like that. Well, if you see Bigfoot, just throw him some beef jerky. Ha 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 ha. You know, like it's a big joke to them, and they can't even comprehend how I could make a YouTube channel and talk about this stuff and have encounters. And even from my own family, they give me, you know, different comments. And I'm just like, look, it's all fun and games until one day you're out back. And I've got people in my family that are very big outdoorsmen that hike all the time. They backpack. They're environmentalists. So they're out into the woods for their job. And I look at them and say, look, it's all fun and games until one day you're going to see something twice your size that doesn't fit, that could tear you apart in an instant, is going to walk through your life and you cannot explain it. That is what my work is, you know? So go on blissfully unaware, dangerously unaware, in my opinion, but someday you're going to see something, you're going to find a print, a rock's going to sail through the air, you're going to see a 2-foot-wide tree turned upside down, you're going to see something that doesn't make sense, and then you can either shrug it off or you could give it some thought. And that's pretty much what I tell my family that thinks I'm crazy. And I'm like, well, there's a certain point, like, everybody's crazy until you see it yourself. And that's kind of where I come in. So.
Yeah. And I think there's, you made so many points, and it's hard for me to.
Sorry. I tend to just go.
No, it's so. Okay. I'll try to connect them all. I'll try to connect them all here. So, you know, along those lines, you know, we have these different schemas that are kind of, you know, we're programmed to believe a certain way or think a certain way. And these are being kind of thrown our way to, you know, accept this, don't accept that. But with the fragmentation of media and us being able to have these democratized tools at our fingertips, people are able to get more and more niche and more specialized. And then you can go deep. You can go deep on each of these subjects. And you can find what flavor sits well with you. You can take that data and triangulate it with other data.
Right.
And so then you end up becoming, for lack of a better term, an armchair expert. Not you per se. I'm more thinking about my journey.
I am pretty much. I do field work, but I am mostly an armchair researcher. I look at a lot of encounters. I look at professional work, and then I come to my own conclusions and I share those with people. I just don't have the time, money, bandwidth, whatever, to be out in the woods 365 days a year looking for these things. And to tell you the truth, I know people that do go out and look for Bigfoot every single weekend, and it's not all that productive, you know? So I think you're better off looking at encounters and what people are saying and what doctors and primatologists and normal witnesses and everyday hunters and Native American stories, and you're better putting it all together and coming to your own hypothesis than going out in the woods, in my opinion, in a lot of cases, and trying to see these things for yourself. I mean, you should definitely do field work if you can, but you really need to look at what we already have collected. So,
you know, man, my mind is just going 100 miles an hour. one of the things, this is great. I love this. I love it. One of the things that I was thinking about is, it's been, I don't know, a couple of weeks. I listen to Joe Rogan every now and again. He's got a lot of, he's a very well-rounded individual. He has a pretty open mind, except when it comes to Bigfoot. He needs to open up a little bit more about that.
He was for a while.
He was
very into it. And then I think after, you know, so many nights in the woods, he was like, ah, these guys are losers. And he kind of went home, which I kind of get, you know. But I probably listened to probably every 10 shows. I probably listened to one of his stuff just because he's got people on that I don't care about.
Yeah.
You know.
So Joe, he's kind of turned his back on the whole Bigfoot thing. Like, I don't think it's true. So put that in your hat for a minute. And then I was listening to. Are you familiar with Steve Rinella from Meat Eater on Netflix?
Yes.
He has a podcast. It's just the Meat Eater podcast. And a couple weeks ago, he had Laura Krantz on from Wild Thing. And ironic enough, we're going to have Laura on next week as a guest. So that's kind of cool.
Oh, but amazing. That's great.
Yeah, we're totally excited. One of the things that he was talking to Laura about was about Bigfoot was... He is a disbeliever even more than Joe, but he's right. an avid outdoorsman, a hunter,
obviously,
even more than Joe, huge. And I'm thinking, you know, and I'm not trying to question the guy, you know, if he doesn't believe it, he doesn't believe it. But I started thinking about some of these people that are in really high profile positions, and they have a lot to give up if they accept the truth of something in the conspiracy world. They do. And I feel like, geez, this guy has, he's got cookbooks that he sells.
He's a millionaire. He's got a whole empire.
He's got a ranch. He's got the Meat Eater podcast. He's got clothing.
He's got TV sponsors. Show, you know, yeah.
So if he gets on his podcast and he says, yeah, I saw one once, they're totally real, what's going to happen to him?
I'm sure if you got to know Steve Rinella, you knew him for years, and you were out by some campfire, you know, and you guys were passing a flask back and forth, and you were talking about stuff, he could probably tell you some things.
And I was wondering, I'm like, dude, you've been outside more than anyone. You've got to have seen something.
Okay,
but there was this wall, there was a physical wall that I could see being put up even just listening to it. Like, I'm like, come on. And I feel like with Joe and with him and other people, if they accept the truth of Bigfoot or whatever it might be, then they have to give up something, and they're not willing to give it up. A circle of friends, a network of friends, jobs, social status, money, whatever.
Well, and it's really like Steve Rinella, I kind of understand, because I have a lot of big game hunters in my family, and I've known a lot of them. And they all just kind of give, they don't really talk about it with me at all. They just kind of give me an eye roll. Almost kind of like they're scared of the truth more than they're not accepting of it. But what's kind of disappointing with Joe Rogan is he makes his living on, I don't give an F, I don't care, I'll believe whatever I want, and I'll say it. That's kind of his brand, is no matter how out there it is, no matter what it is, I'll talk about it. So when Joe Rogan does throw up a wall, which is very rare, to give him credit, it is very strange. Now, when it comes to Steven Rinella, I kind of almost think that it might be more than him not wanting to give his career. Who knows? Some government could have taken him aside after he had an encounter and said, look, we're going to make sure we're going to promote your media. We're going to do this for you. Hunting's really passe right now, but we're going to keep you out of the heat. We're going to use you as this and that. But when it comes to Bigfoot, you never saw anything. You saw a bear, and anybody brings it up to you, you have to tell them that they're, you know, it's BS. And if you're Steve Rinella, or most people, I probably would. I would be like, okay, deal. You're going to make me a famous millionaire where I get to hunt every day for a living. Yeah, I'll say Bigfoot's BS, you know? So, you know, there may be that aspect of it, or he may be, you know, like a full shill on it, you know, where he's somebody trying to cover for the government. I don't know. There's a lot of theories in the Bigfoot world. I don't know if you guys want me to name names, but there are some names of some very high profile Bigfoot people, that are known, that have been on TV, that that's not their real names, that they're government shills. They're some kind of like a Bigfoot spy, or they're some kind of a spokesperson or for like disinformation, you know, kind of like a lot of the rumors about Bob Lazar being, you know, a government shill, for like misinformation. There's a couple well-known Bigfooters that there's a lot of rumors circling around that these guys are, there for disinformation, and a lot of the work that they do is that Bigfoot is peaceful. So,
well,
there's just so many layers to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think like anything, you're going to have detractors, you're going to have, misdirection, you're going to have all these different, like you said, layers to it. You know, personally, I'm fine not naming names, but just, you know, I think a lot of people can kind of, make their own choices on that of who's who.
Right.
Yeah. We all kind of have the ability to navigate it.
Right. Well, and I think you get into this subject heavy enough, and then you look at the really super popular mainstream, almost kind of household name Bigfoot people, and you look at their work closely, and you realize it doesn't match up with the stuff that like we talk about. And then you kind of can draw your own conclusions about what they're up to or what their motivations are. So yeah, you don't really even need to name names on that one. It's just absolutely fascinating. Oh, so I wanted to share a story with you guys. My uncle, my mom's brother, is a retired forest ranger. He worked in, he was in Island Park for like 25 years or something like that. In the last 5 years he spent in Bozeman, at the Grand Targhee National Forest. You guys are from Idaho, so you probably know that area.
That's our backyard right here. So
cool. Yeah, so he was a forest ranger for many, many years. And I've often asked him, do you ever had anything? And he hunts and fishes like everybody does up there, because what else are you going to do up there? He's a big-time hunter. He's a big-time fisherman. He ties his own flies and teaches fishing classes and has done guide work. He's gone to Alaska and Canada and hunted just about everything at one point or another. And he pretty much does it all. And I asked him, I'm like, have you ever seen Bigfoot? And he always just kind of went, nope. I'm like, you ever seen anything strange in the woods? He's like, nope, never seen anything strange. I'm like, you've never once heard a call that didn't sound quite like a coyote, or heard something, or found a footprint, or had a strange rock, or got a creepy feeling once in all the years you've been in the woods since you were 8 years old fishing. And he's like, nope, never. And I'm just like, you're pretty much lying. I didn't want to say that to my uncle. And then after a little while, he shared a story with me. He was driving from West Yellowstone to Ennis. I think you guys know that area. And he was driving down the road, and he's like, well, I've never seen Bigfoot, but one day I saw a 7 foot tall black guy wearing a fur coat walking in the ditch next to the road. And I'm like, how many 7 foot tall black guys are in Idaho walking in the middle? You know where the highways are up there. You know,
it's a bunch of nuts in a ditch.
Wearing a fur coat in like July, like in the middle of summer. You know, he said, oh, it was this big, giant, tall black guy, skinny, with this big, giant, long beard and this big, long dreadlock hair, wearing this brown fur coat walking in the ditch. He says, it was the strangest thing. And I'm like, how fast were you going? He's like, I don't know, 70 miles an hour in a truck driving by. And I'm like, yeah, Bigfoot doesn't exist, but 7 foot tall, you know, basically Shaquille O'Neal with a beard and a fur coat walking in a ditch, in the middle of nowhere between West Yellowstone and Ennis. That makes far more sense than Bigfoot, you know? So that was the story I wanted to share with you guys. It's really funny. It's really funny sometimes the conclusions that non-believers will come up with just so they don't have to say that it could be Bigfoot, you know?
Yeah. It's like that game from Office Space, jump to conclusions.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, maybe it was a bear, or, you know, like the dog man thing. Oh, it was a wolf with hurt front legs, and it was a 250 pound wolf with front legs. And because of its deformity, it was running across the road. And what you thought were hands were really twigs caught in its fur. And you're just like, what?
And, and the fact that we do that, that humans do that, that they'll try to explain it away with such a stretch versus just saying, oh yeah, there's another humanoid creature out there that I just happen to see. Like, that's a way easier explanation than coming up with all these weird fantastical ideas.
You don't even have to admit it's Bigfoot or Dogman or whatever creature you saw.
Exactly.
You just have to say, I saw something strange. I don't know what it is. And I found it to be scary, or I've never seen anything like it. If it was Bigfoot, I don't know. If it was Dogman, I don't know. But this is what it looked like, and I don't know what it is. To me, that's like what you're saying, like the root word of UFO, unidentified flying object. People immediately assume aliens. You could see a light in the sky that's, you know, making an erratic pattern, and you don't know what it is. Well, guess what? That's a UFO. It doesn't mean it's an alien. It just means it's an unidentified flying object. The same thing in the woods. Like, I saw something unexplained in the woods. I saw a big hairy creature in the woods. You don't even have to admit to me it was Bigfoot. Just admit that you saw something, you know?
Yeah. And that's, you know, I think that that's kind of at the heart of all these things, you know, conspiracies, Bigfoot, that it goes off of, you know, you have witness testimony, you have people that, you know, that can share a story about, you know, the time that they worked at Area 51, or you have people that have come forward on the Antarctica front. You have a lot of different research and disclosure type information coming out now. And for those of you listening, we've kind of chased a little bit of a different rabbit hole, but it's totally organic, and we actually really like this because this format works really well for us, and we'll definitely have Matt back on.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, if you'd have us, you know, go the other way.
I'm gonna come up and knock on your door with a case of beer. So,
little bit of libation, huh?
So, yeah. So Matt, one question I have is, you know, tying back to the whole Antarctica thing. What's some of the latest things that you have been studying up on that you feel has some teeth to it?
With Antarctica or just paranormal in general?
With Antarctica.
You know, Antarctica is one of those things, like, I heard strange stuff many years ago on Coast to Coast. I think I kind of touched on that. And then four or five years ago, I kind of heard some of the David Wilcock stuff when he was first starting to talk about Antarctica. Then I got really into it. And to be honest, I kind of heard some other people's podcasts and watched some YouTube videos on it, not related to David Wilcock. It was a mini documentary on YouTube. It was all about Admiral Byrd. And it was kind of like, it was more like a History Channel version of it. But they kind of do touch on a lot of the weirdness and why he went down there with a battle group if it was supposedly a scientific expedition. And so it's been kind of off and on. And it's only really been recently, in the last couple, I don't know, the last month or so, I've kind of picked it back up again. And for me, I like to always think of, you know, you can compartmentalize every part of a mystery. And I'm kind of less focused on the Nazi alien point of view of it. And I'm actually looking at the science of what we know of. Well, there's a pole shift. Okay. The poles of the Earth have shifted. They found evidence that every so many thousands of years it does this. Okay. Then you look at the great flood myths, and then they look at evidence all around the world, especially in mountain ranges and stuff like that, that there was a great flood. Okay. And you look at every culture has their version of a flood, from the Epic of Gilgamesh to Noah to, you know, virtually all the Abrahamic religions and even the Chinese religions and everything else, they all talk about this great flood. And then you start to think about the poles. So for me, it's kind of fitting the pieces together, taking a look at other phenomenons and other seemingly unrelated things, and it starts to paint a big picture. Even if you take the alien base part of it out of there, even if you take the Nazi part of it out of there, which are all intriguing little offshoots of this mystery. Just for me, the earth science of it, of there being a prosperous, tropical, advanced civilization that within weeks, you know, or days even, to have this massive planetary shift followed by this huge flood, and from something being lush and tropical, from like say you put Hawaii where Antarctica is now, you know, it's quite fascinating for me to just think about it from that point of view. And that's what I've been trying to wrap my head around, it is the science point of it, and how a lot of our modern science can actually explain quite a bit, the poles, the floods, the ice caps, how it all fits together. And I think it's all quite fascinating. And obviously the aliens and the Nazi parts of it, and the green pastures and dimensions and everything else that kind of, you know, the parallel dimensions and portals and all the other, the underground pyramid. I mean, that's all fascinating, of course. I mean, you would expect to find a lot of stuff if there really was a lost civilization, but trying to wrap my brain around, I guess it's the engineering in me, trying to wrap my brain around the planetary shift that would actually create that, is what I've been thinking a lot about.
Yeah. And that could come back to, some of the other things that have been purported of, you know, in the Vedic texts, when they're talking about different, almost what sounds like a nuclear war,
right.
Maybe that pushed the earth off its axis, or, took out part of the atmosphere for a flash freezing. Who knows? You know, those are all different pieces of information that may or may not tie together, but it's like, you gotta, you know, find out what those data points are and weigh them in the balance, and then see if they do triangulate.
You know, and it almost, just at a, you know, 10,000 foot level, it almost makes too much sense when you think of Atlantis, Antarctica, the pole shifting, which is documented to happen, the great floods, the flash freezing of these mammoths, core samples, the way how it's off limits. It almost, like what we were saying in the beginning, you know, these strange pyramids that they're finding under the ice, all this strange reports, and there's so much going on. There has to be something there, you know, and the whole thing is just really fascinating. In fact, it's kind of made me goof off of the whole Bigfoot, Dogman, cryptid thing lately. I should probably stay on task and, you know, do some more work here. But it's just so easy to do. It's just so easy to dive into this stuff.
It is. It's a huge. It's just a wormhole of different avenues that we can chase. And one of the things that I think is almost comical is the fact that you have certain government agencies and certain government politicians that are protecting Antarctica with such fervor. You know, well, not only the airspace, but, you know, you got, well, don't, you know, we got to lower greenhouse emissions because the ice shelves are melting. Everything's melting. Well, what are you worried about melting? Like,
what are you worried about it exposing?
Yeah, what's it going to expose? Is that your real worry?
Well, I'm one of those people when it comes to environmentalism where I'm like, yeah, turn off the hot water while you're brushing your teeth. Turn off the lights. Don't run your AC if you have to. Don't be an idiot. Recycle your bottles. Recycle your cans. Reuse grocery bags. I'm, you know, very common sense approach. But I think there's a lot of environmentalism that's just part of a money-making scheme, you know, they play off of people's fears. Because I've heard everything from you know, I was born in 1983. I'm 35 years old. I don't know how old you guys are. How old are you guys?
So I'm Brett. Oh, Brett. I'm 40. And
I'll be 39 this year.
Yeah, you guys are just a couple years older than me. Like, I'm sure you guys remember in public school, or, you know, even in the early 90s and in the 80s, like, the rainforest is disappearing, and in 10 years, the ice caps will be melted. You know, it's like 30 years ago, they were telling us the ice caps were all going to melt, and we're all going to die, you know. And you have somebody tell you that within the next 5 or 10 years, we're going to have catastrophic, the ice caps are going to melt. Then on the other end of it, I hear other scientists say that if all of the world's oceans were 80 degrees right now, even in the Arctic Ocean, in the Antarctic Ocean, were 80 degrees, you suddenly were able to heat all the oceans to 80 degrees, it would still take 5,000 years for all the ice to melt, because there's just that much ice, you know? So you have such a wild variation in calculation, and you know, you can massage the numbers to do anything you want, you know, make it look like they're going to melt next year or 10,000 years from now. So yeah, it really kind of lends credibility to the, that, you know, what are you guys so worried about down there? If it's just a bunch of penguins and ice, you know, it's like, okay, we can build civilizations. We build stuff all over the place with environmental impact studies. You know, like, what are you guys so worried about in Antarctica unless there's some bigger mystery, you know? And I'm sure it's a very high level thing. Like, I'm sure the president and, you know, his cabinet members, I'm sure they don't know what's going on with it either. It's probably very deep state, CIA, you know, behind the scenes corporate people too, that are really trying to keep this a secret.
Yeah. Michael Sala did a great job pointing out the different contractors that have been working down there. There's basic, they kind of permutate their names or their different departments, but you know, you've got BAE, you've got Northrop Grumman, you've got, you know, Lockheed, you've got Raytheon. They've all kind of taken their turns rotating into this corporation, if you will.
You're going to tell me all these same goofball companies, all these real heavy hitters, the biggest industrial companies in the world are interested in ice and penguins.
Yeah, you know, it's like it's like you know, Honeywell, we make thermostats for your home, and we make motors for nuclear subs. But
well, yeah, it's like the same thing with General Electric. They make F-22 fighter engines and nuclear submarine engines and washing machines. You know,
yeah,
it's like, I want to be transferred to the world domination division. I'm tired of making toasters.
That's right. How do you make the jump from just being like a aircraft wiring spec guy to going into skunk works, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. A little off subject, but I think it kind of ties into this thing. Have you guys ever heard of Mel's Hole?
Doesn't ring a bell.
Or have you heard of the well that they, apparently the deepest hole that was man-made dug in Russia? This kind of goes into the hollow earth theory.
I know about some of the deeper mines in like Chile and Argentina, but not this Russian one. Why don't you enlighten us there?
Well, I'll talk about Mel's Hole. The listeners are going to kill me because I don't remember the exact location. I think it's Washington State or Oregon, somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. Could even be Idaho. Somewhere there in North America, this guy's got this big block of land, and he's got this hole. He's been on coast to coast, and he talked about it, and he didn't want to do this, where when he first got to, like, it's this big, like, you know, like, this is Sparta kind of well, if you guys know what I'm talking about, like, this big, giant hole in the ground. And when he first got there, like, he was like, well, that's a big dark hole. I can't even see the bottom. And he'd shine a flashlight and couldn't see the bottom. And then he would like throw a rock in there and he would never hear it hit. And then there was all this strange reports of things crawling in and out of the hole, or they would, you know, put microphones and stuff in there and all these tests to see how deep it was. And they could never figure it out. And then there's, you know, stories about lowering people down there and them coming out like all insane from seeing another world or something. And there's all this conjecture about what was going on with Mel's Hole. And there's kind of a similar one with this drill in Russia. It was reportedly the world's deepest man-made hole. And the official story was, yeah, they dug down. It's like 8 or 10 or 12 miles or something like that, the longest they've ever bored down into the crust of the earth. And I guess it got to the point where the heat was so bad that they couldn't cut any farther, and that was the official story. But the unofficial story of this hole that they dug in Russia is that they were drilling and drilling and drilling and drilling, and eventually they broke through. And when they broke through, they pulled the drill back up, and they're like, well, okay, well, we broke through into a cavern. So they were lowering, this was like in the 50s or 60s or something like that. It couldn't even be the 70s, but they were lowering tape recorders and mic equipment in there, and they were hearing screams like they had broke into like hell, basically. Or, and then there's other reports that they broke into like an underground civilization, and, you know, they were sending cameras down there and stuff, and things weren't coming back, or things were coming back up with like footage of these strange creatures looking at this hole that broke through their ceiling, essentially. And, you know, obviously if they did break through to some underground colony that's not going to be there, the government would just tell you that, no, we didn't hit anything. But it could also just be a bunch of made up stuff anyway. But yeah, it's kind of along those same lines of the whole Antarctic mystery thing. You know, there's lots of these weird little stories about Hollow Earth and things being hidden in plain sight. And then with the UFO world, they have all their underground base stuff, which is also quite fascinating.
You know, and after you started talking about the Mel's Hole, I didn't refer to it in my mind as Mel's Hole, but I do remember that gentleman on Coast to Coast. I think I listened to him. It was a couple of years back that I ran across it, but something.
I want to say it was the late 90s or early 2000s. Like, it was
a long time ago.
Yeah, it was still the Art Bell days, like the Art Bell heyday.
Exactly.
That he was on there.
But this guy, I mean, for whatever it's worth, I do remember that he was saying that there were some creatures that were crawling in and out of this hole.
Yeah.
I don't remember the details behind it, but, you know, you mentioned Russia and those holes in Siberia that were mysteriously opening up.
That kind of ties
into that as well, as there's all these, you know, and some of that happened in Russia. I guess, right, Siberia is in Russia, or is part of the one and the same, but they just kept opening up, and they're like perfectly round, perfectly circular, and they're straight up and down, and they're just very, very odd, and kind of makes me wonder if there's more than that going on.
Well, and especially if you look at the whole Siberia thing, it's like not really near the tectonic plates, volcanoes, like where you kind of expect to see that stuff happen. You know, it's just like an anomaly in the earth, you know? So it's, you know, it's really, and then when you start to think about what's causing these things, or Mel's Hole, or the big well that they dug in Russia, or these mysterious sinkholes, or some of these caves that go super, super deep that they've never explored the bottom of, or some of these sea caves that they found underwater. And you start to challenge the whole thing of like, okay, so it's a crust for all these miles, then it's a mantle, then it's a molten core. I get that. But then there's supposed to be tectonic plates. Well, how far down do they go? Is that different? I thought the crust was really thick. Are these tectonic plates floating on lava above the crust or below the crust? And it's really kind of, you know, I'm not a geologist, but it's really kind of hard to keep up with. And it's all just theories. You know, they have no idea what's in there. And once again, the disinformation, if it was something completely different, would we ever know it, you know, or what would they tell us?
Right. That leads me to, there's this story that came out of, I first heard it on Red Ice Radio. I don't know if you're familiar with Heinrich. Heinrich is a Norwegian guy that has a pretty sweet podcast.
That's a very Norwegian name, Heinrich.
Yeah, he's totally cool though. But he shared a story about a guy named Olaf Janssen, and this Olaf Janssen had a documented story that actually he basically told before he passed. He actually had lived a pretty long life. He immigrated to the United States, and before he passed. He had them, a friend or a neighbor record this story. And the story was that he sailed with his father on a fishing trip up in, this is in the northern countries.
And, right.
He sailed on this fishing trip, I want to say is in the late 1890s. So anyway, they sailed and sailed, and then kind of hit a big storm. And then as they hit this big storm, they kind of got sucked into what they thought was a whirlpool. They came out on the other side, and they basically were, there was pollen on the ground. He could take off his jacket. It was warm. And then they actually went further downstream or whatever the current was. And they encountered a culture that was a culture of giants that said that they believed in the God Jehovah, and they had advanced technology. They had basically, for lack of a better term, a UFO transit system They had vast seas and oceans, lots of gold, and just basically were this lost civilization that kept him there for I think he was there for several years, learned their language, all of this. And then he actually ends up
coming back,
and he kept it to himself for years and years and years. And actually, I think he passed in the 60s. So if you look at that time frame, you know, from 1890 to 1960, that was kind of his lifespan. And then he just kind of drops this story on a good friend. And there's illustrations. There's, you know, a whole, almost like a book of this story.
Fascinating.
Super fascinating. And it kind of lends some credence to that Hollow Earth theory. I think there's more to that.
Well, it almost sounds to me that's more like parallel dimension, you know, where things can occupy the same space, but just a different vibrational frequency, like quantum physics, if you guys are aware, then like, you know, a physical hole that he fell in and then came out on the other side. But yeah, that's absolutely fascinating. I've heard, not that exact story, but I've heard a number of stories where people, you know, like say they're like, there's a pretty famous one from San Bernardino, which is down the road here in California from where I am, where this lady was driving home one day, and she was driving and she felt really dizzy for a second. And then she kept driving, didn't think anything of it. And then she's driving through San Bernardino, but it doesn't look like the landmarks are different. The buildings are different. The cars look different. The street names are different. And she drove around this strange version of San Bernardino in kind of a haze. She felt really kind of out of it. And she drove through it for a couple of hours. The street names, she didn't recognize anybody. It looked like the city with like, but somebody rearranged it all like from like another lifetime or another realm, not like time travel, but just a different version of that city. And then after a bunch of hours of driving around, she eventually came out of it and ended up back in her town. And she had started with a full tank of gas and had like no gas left because she was driving around in this strange version of like San Bernardino. So yeah, there's all sorts of stories like this of missing time, or where I don't know what the explanation is. People go into like a different universe or a parallel dimension, or maybe she was on the side of the road with her foot on the gas idling and she hallucinated the whole thing. I don't know, but it's just there's a lot of stories like this that come up. I mean, they're really out there.
Yeah, those stories, especially the one that James just shared and the one that you shared, There's so many of them that there's got to be something going on. You know, some of them might be true, some of them might not be, but there's enough of them that there has to be some level of truth to some of them.
Right. Are you guys familiar with the Skinwalker Ranch? I'm sure you guys are.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, it's not far from you guys without going down that whole rabbit hole that way. I think that's one of the locations, and this is one of my personal theories, and it's kind of shared with a lot of people. There's certain spots in the world, and in the United States and everywhere, that seem to be some kind of a portal or some kind of a connection or something, a door or a gateway or a vortex, whatever you want to describe it, to something that we don't understand, another time, another realm, another parallel dimension, some far-off planet, and it's a wormhole. I don't know what it is, but there seems to be certain spots around the United States and around the world that just have these super high strangeness. And that was one of the things from Skinwalker Ranch, is the portal that would open up in the sky and they would hear voices and they would see things crawl through it, and kind of like Mel's Hole and some of the other things we were talking about. There seems to be certain hot spots of high strangeness around the world. I always just find it very fascinating.
Well, and with that, you have, you know, decades and decades of history and folklore surrounding that with the different tribal people there in that area.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not like it's so left field. You know, there's something to go off of.
Right. Okay. Well, if we put it into perspective for a minute, it's like, okay, the people around Skinwalker Ranch called it the Skinwalkers, because they had all these strange creatures and strange voices, and basically their equivalent of demons. Now, the guy in Scandinavia who went in the whirlpool saw Land of Giants. Well, Scandinavia, their culture talks about giants. in California with Bigfoot, they talk about the hairy man. The hairy man will get you. You know, if you go out at night, the hairy man will take you and eat you. And you look at all these different cultures from all around the world, and it's like, okay, their version of where they go or what they experience, you know, it's like they're not lying. They're not making it up. You know, these people think they're seeing or believe something historically. And I think that's always important to keep in mind.
Yeah. And I mean, those anecdotal stories that get passed down, you know, they have an oral tradition. A lot of the tribal people do, and they're very strict in how they tell the story and how they, you know, what the outcome of it is. Now, if it's something that's meant to protect the people, you know, don't wander from the fire, you know,
right.
Don't feed it or whatever the case is. I think that there's some, is it the Spokane tribe or, I'm trying to remember the area up there. The Spokane tribe or the tribe just north of that, has a tradition that they actually don't fish a certain section of the Columbia River, and that they just kind of, they just leave that for Sasquatch.
Well, I know the, up there in the Pacific Northwest, and, it's the Kwakwaka Ewok tribe. If you guys are familiar with Tom Seawood, he's a Bigfoot guy, and he's a Native American, and he's really great. He's fascinating. You could probably come on your show. He's got a great Native American perspective of it. But yeah, he shares all kinds of Native traditions about, if you're out there looking for clams or cockles and digging them up, you have to leave a few for Bigfoot. Or if you go camping, put garlic on the other side of the camp because they love to eat garlic. And then they have their whole tradition of the Zuniqua, the wild woman of the woods, which is a female Bigfoot that would scoop up kids and take them away, you know? So yeah, it seems like every culture is warning you about, you know, giants and Bigfoots and dogmen and, you know, all this other strange stuff. And, you know, we just all consider it as passé, or it's just a story and it's a myth. It didn't really happen, you know? And you have to remember, if you can go back to the Middle Ages or even 1,000 years ago, these people didn't consider themselves old fashioned. They considered themselves state of the art. They weren't any stupider than you are. They weren't any smarter than you, you know, they were modern humans, just as smart as you, making your own conclusions. So it's not like you're better than somebody 1,000 years ago. You just have more technology, you know, it's not like you were smarter. So these people, when they wrote these things down, when they told these stories, you know, I think a lot of times there may be some stretching of the truth, but it's all based on something.
Yeah, I think that angle of it is an interesting and fascinating aspect to think about. I never think about it that way. You know, we have all this technology, but as far as the ability to reason, the ability to retell what happened, there's that. There's also kind of that aspect of our primal instinct, or you know what. You know, we know that that DNA can store information. We know that some of that could be passed on. Is it possible that these, you know, the data that's in our DNA is actually telling us, hey, look out for this, you know, this primal memory of something in the past?
Well, I did a whole video on this a few months back about is Bigfoot scary because of genetic memory? And it's always fascinating to me, if you guys spend any times in the woods, but I'm sure that you have, is that when you go out in the woods, animals react differently to something on two legs than they do something on four legs, kind of how the Indians used to wear wolf skins to sneak up on the bison. Well, that doesn't make any sense, because you think the wolves eat the bison, but they would wear wolf skins and they were able to sneak up on the bison, versus if they walked up on two legs, all the bison would run off. And when you're in the woods and you're tromping around and you alert things and you scare things up, and then when we come face to face with Bigfoot, something that's not supposed to exist, I think it's scary because it's not supposed to exist and it's a paradigm shift. But I think there's something genetic deep down in us that when we see a Sasquatch, we're like, okay, we're not King Ape anymore. You know, suddenly I'm not the baddest primate in the woods. There's something bigger than me. And it wasn't supposed to exist, and now I'm looking right at it. So yeah, I think there's a big genetic component to fear. Kind of like if you had never seen a bear before and you saw a bear, you'd be scared of it, or a lion or whatever, just because thousands of years ago we were chased and eaten by these things, you know? So I think there's a certain genetic memory of it.
Well, and with so many of the encounters, you've got people, you know, the hair stood up on the back of their neck before they saw something. You've got
right. You've
got these different aspects that kind of almost happen in the same order. And right. So it does harken back to what, you know, exactly what you're saying with the genetic memory thing. So fascinating stuff. This is,
oh yeah,
this is too fun. I think we could go for too long, but I know that you've got a family. We've got families we've got to take care of. And
yeah, actually I just looked up at the time and it's like, wow, the 2 hours went really fast.
It really did. It really did. But that means that we're onto something that, we could maybe do this again down the road. So we're
absolutely,
we're super excited about it. We might have to break this up into two parts.
Or make it a every couple of months thing or something like that. You know, or there's a number of podcasts and shows that I'm like a frequent guest or contributor to. So I don't mind doing that, you know?
Well, you've just got to spread yourself out more, you know, like you were saying, it's, it's either way, it's still work, you know, it's still,
yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, we can't thank you enough for coming on. We appreciate the different directions and the pieces of information that you have. You're a well-spoken person. You're able to bring a unique perspective to things that I think most people can relate to, and help us all understand this mysterious world around us, including Sasquatch, including Antarctica. And we touched on aliens. What else did we hit? We hit,
you know, just about everything.
Just about everything. But
except ghost, really.
It's, yeah, true. But I mean, it's all interconnected in some way, and it's fascinating to try to find the common thread that connects these things and make more sense of these things. And we really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on.
Well, real quick, one more point is, if there's something in the paranormal world or some mystery that we don't know, I think it's good to have, especially in the paranormal, have a ghost hunter, have a UFO guy, have a Bigfoot guy, have a hard-nosed scientist, have a skeptic, like have a panel of people. Because if you get 8 Bigfoot people all looking at Bigfoot, that's not going to help you. Like all these different disciplines and topics, I think it's very important that we do cross over, because we, you know, because I look at everything from like a cryptid perspective. Like when I was talking to the demonologist guy, I was asking him questions about some of the more scary monsters, you know. And I just think it's important that if you're into Bigfoot and anything or whatever subject you're into, that you branch out sometimes and you listen to different things, because I think you'll be really surprised how it ties back. You know, the fear that some people get around a ghost is the exact same fear that they get around a Bigfoot, you know. So I just think it's very important for people to kind of keep an open mind and look into other subjects.
That's very true. And just overall, keep that open mind and that curiosity. And I think, you know, for each of us, it's a different journey, but we can all kind of draw upon our different experiences and, you know, the different information that's available at our fingertips as well.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I want to thank Matt as well. This has been an awesome conversation. It's definitely something that feels very simpatico. You know, we're very very alike. All three. I know. I barely got that out correctly. Whatever that means. But you know, to kind of tie in what James said is there's so many aspects of our world that make us scratch our heads. The earth that we live on, it's large, it's vast, it has a lot of secrets, it has a lot of history, and it has a lot of high strangeness, you know. And for some of the listeners that are out there that might say, inner earth, hollow earth, Antarctica, you know, all these things that we've talked about, if you're not super familiar with it, or if this is a new subject, you know, do some research on it. Don't turn a blind eye to it. There's definitely something to these things that we've talked about. There's certainly something that has to be going on, and we're all just trying to find what the truth is. And I feel that's what the journey is all about, especially with this podcast. It gives us an outlet to talk to people, to network, to get our ideas out there, and to really kind of flush these theories out and just walk towards the truth as much as we can. And I think that's important.
Well, you know, and one of the things I always like to remind my viewers from time to time is because I talk about a theory or I study a theory or I watch a documentary or talk to people about it, doesn't necessarily that that's what I believe. You know, just because Matt from Matt Squatch Presents talks about a hollow earth or aliens being demons or something, that's not necessarily what I believe. And I think once you, you know, keep your own beliefs in a different category, but come at things with an open mind. And also for your fans and our fans, just because we talk about something doesn't necessarily that we believe in it. We just think it's something interesting to talk about. So
exactly. And it tickles our fancy, and it's fun to talk about that entertainment value. You know, we wouldn't do this if it's not fun. And I think you would agree.
Absolutely. That's why we're here.
Well, great. Thanks for coming on tonight. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you another time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody, thank you for joining us on this latest episode. That concludes our show for the day. Both James and I had a really fun time talking with Matt. He's one of the smartest guys we've ever talked to on multiple subjects, and we just can't thank him enough for coming on the show. And for those interested, next week we're going to be having Laura Krantz from Wild Thing on. It's going to be a great show, and we hope to have a lot of fun with it. In the meantime, you can visit us at LostRiverLegends.com, or you can reach out to us at LostRiverLegends@gmail.com and let us know how we're doing. Take care.